cutting taxes, improving worker training, and expanding the state's private voucher school program are among the Assembly Republican priorities for the next 2 years. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Wednesday, October 29th. We will talk with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss about the Assembly Republicans' legislative agenda for the next legislative session, and we'll welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Robin Voss is a Republican state representative from Rochester and the Assembly Speaker. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So the Republicans' forward agenda has five areas of reform. Briefly tell us what the five are, and then we'll get into them one by one.
Sure. The most important thing for us to remember is that as we go through the process of getting ready for next session, we wanted to ensure that we focus on the priorities that we've been hearing throughout the course of this year. Staff is at the Capitol. Legislators are there still doing work. So we wanted to put together a comprehensive agenda that really focuses on all of our priorities. You mentioned a few of them. Of course, having quality education is important, reforming our tax structure so that we have a tax burden that is not in the top 10 as it is currently, trying to ensure that we put resources into getting people the comprehensive worker training and services they need to become dependent on themselves instead of dependent on government. We want to fight against waste and fraud in so many programs that really hamper the opportunity for us to have a creative and expanding workforce. And most importantly, we want to focus on reforming government so that when we look and say government in Wisconsin is working, it's working for everybody so that we are getting people back to work, focusing on lowering the cost of being in Wisconsin and keeping more of our citizens successful and able to support themselves.
You said at a recent news conference that the centerpiece of the agenda is a focus on jobs. Let's start off talking about worker training. What kind of legislation might we expect in this regard?
Well, a couple things that we're really proud of. Over the course of the past 2 years, Republicans in Wisconsin, led by Governor Walker in the Assembly, have put more than $135 million into worker training. A lot of that directly through the tech colleges, but in some creative programs, one known as Fast Forward, where we're actually giving grants to businesses all across the state to help train their workers to the jobs that are most in demand. And I think we want to look at programs like that to say, how do we take individuals who perhaps don't have the training or the skill set to get a job, and what do we do for that? So number one, we plan on increasing the amount of opportunities that we have through that Fast Forward program. We want to do more direct worker training. But some creative things that we're not doing right now is we want to take and make sure that everybody who currently doesn't have a job has the skills to do so. So one of the things in our plan that I know Governor Walker also supports is drug testing for anybody who's single and able-bodied to make sure that when they go and apply for their job, they can say, I have a certificate from the state showing that I'm drug-free and ready to work. We also want to say that anybody who's on unemployment more than 12 weeks will be required to sign up with a temp agency where the income generated from that temp agency won't count toward their unemployment benefits, so they will actually be able to earn more than just unemployment, increasing their opportunities to get back to work, putting more money in their pocket, and doing so in a way that hopefully provides them skills that make them even more employable. So we want to look at the successes that we've had, but also focus on some new programs, giving people every chance to earn an opportunity to get that new job.
Yeah. How does the drug testing help an applicant rather than hurt the applicant?
Well, number one, we know that the vast majority of people who are on unemployment aren't going to be using drugs, but we still know that they have to go through that drug testing. So as an employer, if you can have people who come in with a good resume, work experience, and have a certification from the state of Wisconsin saying, I am drug-free, now, not only does that save money for the employer not having to do their own drug testing, but it certainly gives them a leg up when you're looking at applicant pools of perhaps, you know, a dozen or 20 or 30 people to say, I'm ready to work and able to do so today is a big advantage to anybody who's unemployed. So not only does it help people who have a substance abuse problem get the treatment they need, but for the vast majority who don't have a substance abuse problem, we hope it'll give them a leg up to get that job and start right away.
Yeah. Will they have help in getting the help they need?
Oh, yeah. Part of our program actually discusses the need to say that people who are on benefits and test positive for drugs will be put into drug treatment programs. We know that early intervention is one of the best successes to get people to break that habit. But I think most of us recognize that someone who's abusing any kind of a substance, be it heroin or marijuana or any illegal drug, clearly puts himself behind the eight ball to try to get a job. not only because they're less productive, but certainly because most employers aren't going to allow someone to be test positive for drugs and employed in their facility.
Besides worker training, how else are you going to encourage job growth?
Two things. Number one, we've had a focus on trying to write the rules, we've called it, where we've gone through the administrative code, which is the follow-up after laws are passed, to make sure that they are still protecting the public, which is our number one priority, but not doing so in a way that creates less opportunities to create a safe environment without a lot of bureaucrats. So we want to keep that write the rules process going. Another idea that we're putting forward, because one of the other areas we found is that when a business wants to locate in a community, they want to get to a site, begin construction, because they usually go there once the need is already found. Now, far too often, we have unnecessary and unneeded regulations that try to stop growth or put too long of a timeline onto it. So what we'd like to do is work with local government and say we want to identify facilities in every single county in Wisconsin, get them pre-permitted, which means they go through the rigorous process before a business comes to town, and that way when somebody wants to build a new factory or a new business, they'll have a job-ready site that hopefully within 30 days of wanting to locate in that facility, because it's already been pre-approved, they'll be able to begin construction, create those jobs, and then get people working even faster as opposed to the current process, which can take months and months and many times discourages businesses from locating, especially in challenging areas.
Is right to work going to be a part of your plans?
It's not on the agenda right now. I have to be honest and say I'm somebody who supports right to work. I was the author of it in the past, but I do not think, and I know, that over the course of the next 2 years it's not going to come up, and then we'll have a discussion about it beyond that, but it certainly isn't on our agenda.
Yeah. So how will the Republicans improve education in Wisconsin?
Well, the last 2 years have been an example of how we could do it. We put more money into schools. We allowed the opportunities of Act 10 to really work their way through the process. So we now know that there are districts all across the state who are paying teachers based on their worth as opposed to just what the union contract says. So we know that there are high-demand teachers who are getting bigger wages, which is what we want for every worker in Wisconsin. And most importantly, we also are going to work to make sure that we have that accountability system put into place. I have to be honest, Joy, and say one of my disappointments of last session was the fact that even though I felt that I pushed as hard as I could with Representative Steinicke, we just could not get that accountability system put into a place in a way that will judge every single school in Wisconsin, be it public, private, or charter or choice, against the same set of standards. So Republicans in the previous two-year budget already put into place a requirement that every single taxpayer-funded child in Wisconsin will take the exact same test. So I want to make sure that the results, which are now going to be apples to apples, are in a report card where schools that are doing well are rewarded and schools that are failing are closed or substantially changed. And it doesn't matter if it's a choice school or a public school. If they're failing kids, we certainly have an obligation to the next generation to not let that continue 1 year longer than it has to.
Yeah. So how would you expand the state's school voucher program?
Well, part of it depends on what our caucus has a discussion and agrees on, but I think that the opportunity for us to look at what's worked is really the best model for future success. I remember about a decade or 15 years ago, Wisconsin had a discussion about open enrollment, and at the time, education advocates from the unions and my Democratic colleagues thought it was the end of public education because we would allow people to go from one public school district to another. And in fact, now it's become incredibly popular. Parents are choosing better schools for all kinds of reasons, and I think that that's the way we want to look at the same option. So if parents want to choose a different public school under today's law, the money follows the child. I think that I would like to have that same opportunity once we put the accountability system into place to say that if somebody wants to use their open enrollment to go to a Catholic school or a private school that they feel better meets the needs of their child, I can't see why Wisconsin, as long as we have those rigorous standards, would say it's not good enough for all of our kids. So we have to look and see what's possible to pay for, because remember, the private school choice system relies entirely on state tax dollars, so it doesn't impact local property tax dollars at all as far as a funding mechanism to help pay for the program. So we definitely have to make that a state priority, and it's one that local governments don't have to worry about because it's funded entirely by state taxpayers.
Elizabeth and Nina has a question. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good morning. My question is regarding the move by the legislature to take first financial control, which, of course, I'm concerned would be total control of the technical college system. Right now, we have a really great technical college in my area that is run by the district, by the people in this district. And I'm a lifelong Republican, and I've always liked the fact that the Republican platform has been to emphasize local control. But I'm seeing some indicators that the state would then take over running first financially, but then completely the technical college system.
Is that on the agenda?
Well, thanks for the call, Elizabeth. Number one, the process that we put into place has no impact whatsoever on the local control of community colleges. What we did is we said that the current process relies pretty heavily on local property tax dollars, and while the control is local, of course, the people who are appointed to the tech college boards are self-selected, so they're not necessarily responsive to taxpayers. They are definitely doing a good job of running the schools, but they haven't always been the greatest stewards of tax dollars if you look at how much money has been levied on the property tax. So we have changed nothing about the way they will govern. They will still decide the programs that they offer, the partnerships they develop with the private sector. It's just that rather than relying on property tax dollars as heavily, it's now going to be funded by the state. So every single person listening who pays property taxes will see a substantial decrease, about 50%, in the amount of money they paid for at the tech school. And every single dollar of that, every dollar, will be made up by state tax dollars as an investment in, once again, worker training and ensuring that we have lower property taxes for people all across the state.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for the call. We have another caller, Joan in Eau Claire, who wants to bring up another issue in the news and on your agenda to some extent. Joan in Eau Claire, go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My concern is about our Government Accountability Board. I'm really grateful for our Government Accountability Board, keeping this government accountable and keeping it in check. I know that Mr. Voss wants to do away with the Government Accountability Board, and I'm wondering why. I'd like to hear that. Also, what was brought up with the Right to Work legislation, if you check out Right to Work states and the average income and the average property values in Right to Work states, they're very low. Now, I know that there are a couple of anomalies throughout the U.S., but those two points, if you could address them, I'd be grateful. Thank you so much.
All right, start with the Government Accountability Board. Do you still think that you had mentioned that you thought that Kevin Kennedy, the head of the Government Accountability Board, needs to go?
Yeah, I still do, and let me tell you why. So I voted for the Government Accountability Board creation several years ago because I thought it would be a better system than the one that we had before. If you remember, the previous system was half Democrat, half Republican. When they couldn't reach a decision, the staff would make it for them, and many times it was unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats making decisions that had a dramatic impact on the election with no oversight of elected officials. I had hoped that the Government Accountability Board would be a better model, and in some ways, I think that it is. I like the idea of having nonpartisan judges making the decisions. But what's happened is the staff has become overtly partisan in many of the moves that they're making. And let's just talk about one example. Over the course of the past several years, I have disagreed with the Government Accountability Board, but I have been a consistent defender of saying, you know what, we're going to win some, we're going to lose some, but that's just the way the process should work in order to be fair. So let's just talk about how the Government Accountability Board, actually not the Government Accountability Board, Kevin Kennedy, made the decision to redesign Wisconsin's ballot. He did a sweetheart contract with a liberal activist to redesign the ballot, never had a public hearing, never had a vote of the Government Accountability Board, who are supposed to be his bosses, never had input from the legislature or any elected official, never told the public it was going to happen until the ballot was already redesigned, and he sent it out to the clerk saying, here's the new form that you're going to utilize. Now, that is certainly not accountability if the people who we selected to be the bosses of the Government Accountability Board never knew about it, never took a vote, never had a public hearing. So clearly, if we want someone to be nonpartisan, they would not do things in secret, which would have a dramatic impact on what's occurring in our election process.
Let me hold you there because we have a short break, and then we have many other questioners, too. So Robin Voss is our guest, a Republican state representative from Rochester. He is the Assembly Speaker, talking with us about the Assembly Republican legislative agenda for the upcoming legislative session. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the Assembly Republicans' legislative agenda with Robin Voss. He is the Assembly Speaker for the state of Wisconsin. And we are welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Representative Voss, our caller before our break, also wanted to point out that she saw studies that showed that right-to-work states are worse off than states that are not right-to-work states. You want to comment on that?
Well, there's studies on both sides. Of course, the ones that I focus on are the ones that show that right-to-work states have a higher rate of growth. And ultimately, it's about the ability of workers to decide for themselves. If they want to be in a union in a right-to-work state, they have every ability to do so. If they don't want to be, they can't be forced to be able to be in a union, paying dues, which primarily in many cases are used for politics, not worker training, and doing that in a way that is against their will. So it's not on our agenda. I know the Democrats have tried to use a lot of scare tactics to say it's going to be brought up in the next 2 years. It's not going to be, so I don't think we should focus any time on it. It's just not part of our agenda.
So what kind of tax cuts do you have in mind?
We're going to continue to focus our tax cuts, number one, on property. One of the things, as I mentioned before, property taxes will be cut in half for everybody who pays property taxes to tech schools. I think that's a major accomplishment. Property taxes are the one that focuses the most at seniors who are on a fixed income or on young people trying to buy a home. So that's always been my greatest priority. Income taxes in Wisconsin are way too high. I'm proud that we had the largest reduction for lower and middle income folks in almost a generation. I think that's something that we should be proud of, and that'll be the focus we keep on to ensure that we get Wisconsin out of the highest tax states in the country, which will create an even greater opportunity to grow jobs and make our economy more productive for everyone.
Yes, but if we cut revenue, what about that $1.8 billion structural deficit?
Well, as we know, the Fiscal Bureau has clearly shown that if you ask a question in a tricky way, like the Democrats did, you will get the answer they were looking for, which is just really based on politics. The Fiscal Bureau has clearly shown that the next budget starts with a $500 million surplus. We'll continue to focus on our priorities, which is why we put more money into Medicaid, health care for the poor, than any other program in the last budget. The second biggest increase was in education, and that'll be our priorities again. So I think we can have the opportunity to continue to control spending, reprioritize and reform government, which is what our plan focuses on, to get rid of things that aren't necessary and do so in a way that can still allow us to reduce taxes while investing in our priorities.
Larry in Middleton is with us. Hello, Larry.
Good morning. The guest said that Wisconsin is a high tax state, but that's not the whole picture. Wisconsin is traditionally a high tax but a low fee state, and when we look at how much each Wisconsin resident pays per year in all taxes and all fees, Wisconsin is in the middle. It historically ranks around 25th.
Now, what about that, Speaker Voss?
Well, I actually am someone who has always believed that people should pay for what they use. I don't believe in having broad-based taxes to pay for a lot of services that people utilize. I would prefer to focus on the ones that government does best, having good public schools, having the opportunity to get people short-term training so that they can support themselves. So I certainly would disagree with the idea that we're not a high-tax state. Property taxes are incredibly high if you look at where we are versus most of the rest of the country. Our income tax burden falls disproportionately on folks, especially those on fixed income. So I guess I just fundamentally disagree with the idea that we're not high-taxed. I know that's a Democratic talking point, but it's one that I just don't believe is accurate.
Mm-hmm. We didn't get to all of the items yet. What do you have in mind for creating stronger families?
Well, a couple things that are really important. Number one, I think that we need to take and utilize every opportunity to ensure people have safe access to a good food, a good home, food stamps when they see it, but make sure that fraud is not in the part of the system. So we want to ensure that we utilize our resources in the most effective way possible to deliver those that are necessary, but to do it in a way that's more effective. I think that one of the other creative ideas we have in there is to give people a reward for the charitable time they donate. We want to try to give everybody the opportunity to have a tax deduction based on how many hours of volunteering you do for your church or your civic organization. We think that will build stronger families and have a lower reliance on government. And we also want to do things that help to get those who traditionally have had a harder time in society adapting, people who just come out of prison. We have a really responsive program that I think will help people who are leaving jail be able to get more opportunities to earn a job to support themselves so they don't return to a life of crime. We think that'll make a lot of communities safer where prisoners return and unfortunately return to that life of crime. We want to help them get a job instead of going back to that. So It's a very comprehensive plan. I'm proud that all of our colleagues worked together on it, and I'm excited about the chance to enact it when we come back in January.
Well, if Democratic challenger Mary Burke happens to win the gubernatorial election, how does that affect how the assembly proceeds?
Well, first of all, I don't think that's going to happen. I feel very confident that Governor Walker has a record we could be proud of. Mary Burke, empty promises, a record that obviously, if we look at her job plan, is plagiarized from all across the country, very few ideas of her own. Her campaign has been almost entirely negative. Think of one new idea, as your listeners are pondering it, that Mary Burke has offered, and they probably can't come up with a single one. Our plan comes up with a whole lot of creative ways to solve problems. So I think if for some reason Mary Burke would win, we would spend most of our time like Washington, where she wants to raise taxes, increase spending, create new programs that don't work, and reward bureaucrats, where ours is the exact opposite, rewarding taxpayers, focusing on reform, reducing the size of government, and making it less expensive to create jobs in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go, and I did want to ask you about a story that's hit the newspapers. The Walker administration is moving forward to sell and redevelop the Hill Farm site in Madison. They're seeking a private developer for a $197 million project. A lot of Democrats are alarmed by the timing of this announcement and say that there's just not, you know, that there needs to be more input on a decision like this.
Well, I don't have a problem with more input. I actually agree with that. But what I will say is that the discussion of trying to make government more efficient has been happening all around the state. And if you talk to the people who work at the DOT, they will tell you that the Hill Farms facility is outdated, and it certainly is not efficient as we look to operate government. So if we can create an opportunity to have construction jobs, do it in a way that makes the facility more efficient, cheaper to operate, lower energy costs, so we can save in the long run, I certainly think it's worth investigating, one that we would support. But I have to have more information as we go forward.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Robin Voss, a Republican state representative from Rochester and the Assembly Speaker. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Brianne Chasso for producing and directing these programs. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.